Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, the voice of the voiceless. I'm here every week at this time, bringing you the big conversation, bringing you the great debate, but it can only be a debate, of course, if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls on 44208601455. You call us, we'll call you to establish a clear line at our expense. But if you get on the television, make sure the volume on your TV is down at zero, preferably the television is off, so that everyone can understand both of us. Or you can SMS the show on 4478008066 or email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. The unrest that swept England's streets over the last 10 days or so has stilled, at least for the moment, but the reverberations of that unrest are threatening the very fabric of Britain as a civilised country, which many of us believe that once upon a time it largely was, at least by comparison with many others. Courts in England are meeting through the night. Condign punishment of a kind touching on the absurd is being handed out. £2,000 a week it costs to keep a British prisoner in jail, and some have been sent to jail for 6 months for stealing goods to the value, in some cases, of less than £10, in almost all cases, of less than £100. So we're going to spend tens of thousands of pounds incarcerating, in many cases, first-time offenders for being caught up in the moment. Of course, the ugliness of those riots was clear for all to see. I told you last week that three friends of mine were killed, allegedly murdered, in the so-called riot in England, in their case in Birmingham. And the three of them were buried today in the city at a funeral attended by more than 20,000 people. May God have mercy upon their soul. So we'll be talking about the reverberations of this unrest and contributing to the great national debate that's broken out as to what might have lain behind them. Mr. Murdoch Jr., for the moment, James Murdoch, he's in even more serious trouble after correspondence from the sacked and jailed royal editor of the News of the World and his employer were leaked to the House of Commons Select Committee, and other correspondence, potentially even more damning, from the lawyer employed by News International, Harbottle and Lewis, of which I was once myself a client, probably even more devastating correspondence from them has been sent to the committee. And of course, in Bahrain, the United States of America has just signed a new deal with the Bahraini dictatorship over the presence of the US Fifth Fleet on the island. Yes, that's the same United States of America that's busily ordering other people to stand down from their positions because of their attitude towards human rights, towards torture, towards unjust incarceration, murder, disappearance, all of which, of course, has been the story of Bahrain, although you wouldn't know it if you were looking for it in the Western media. Luckily, Press TV continues to tell the truth about Bahrain, even if no other Western or even Eastern channel is doing so. And in Yemen, a new government in waiting has been formed. They've got my recognition, but I wonder if they'll get the British government's. It goes without saying, these are all my personal views. They're not the views of Press TV, and they're not the views of any government. Nobody tells me what to think. Nobody tells me what to say. And if you have a different point of view, your call is even more valuable and will be prioritized, I promise you. But the first call of the evening comes all the way from India, from Muhammad, and it's on the British unrest. Muhammad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. How are you?
Very nice to hear from you. Go ahead.
Excellent. Good. George, just want to tell you that I have been following Press TV since last year and a half now, and I have been following you since last year now, And that has led me to be in a journalism now. I've started my master's in journalism in India, and I'm a big supporter of Press TV.
Very good, and, very good.
I want to show these people in India, the great people of India, what's going on in the world, because media here, they're not showing anything what's going on across the globe, and specifically in the Muslim world. So I wanted to contact you since long, and I tried to send an email on your blog, on Press TV comment, and I need to interview you for my magazine that I'm trying to prepare by end of next month.
I need
to interview some more people from the activists in Middle East or some political analysts where I can interview them and I can put their views on my magazine.
We'll do that, Mohammed. Where about in India are you based?
We're in Gujarat. You must have heard about the riots in Gujarat in 2002.
Very much so, very much so. I ask because I'm going to Kerala towards the end of the year. So we might be able to run into each other when I'm
definitely.
In India. Tell me this,
definitely.
How do you watch us in India? Are you watching online or on satellite?
No, definitely on the internet. They've been in Kashmir, over here as well, and in Gujarat, it's up and down, it's not constant. I'm trying to search on Press TV on the internet, and that's the way we watch it.
Okay, well, look, tell your friends. We want more of our friends in India to be tuning in. Let's go back to London, talk to Abdi about Somalia. Abdi, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, welcome, Mr. George Galloway. Good evening.
Good evening to you, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Mr. George Galloway, I see they are bleeding 350 million. That's not a bad money, okay, but this money is going to end in the hand of the corrupt leaders who are in the Somali there. I think the best things I would like to ask from the Muslim world in general is better that it solves the problem between the Al-Shabaab and Somali translational government, the root causes of the problem. That's the causes. But the 350 million, some criminals they will enjoy, some few money will go to the people there, but the problem of the Somalia will remain the same. I think the best thing here is Somali issues to be diverted from the Western countries to go to the Middle East, because that has something to do. Somali continent is another different continent. It's the greater Somalia country it used to be called. So I will ask the Muslim countries to involve. It's better, even if they send, Al-Shabaab, if today the Arab country, like a Middle East country, they told him that Al-Shabaab, stop what you are doing. They are just doing very quick to stop whatever they are doing, the crime that they are committing.
Well, let me, because I have many friends in Somalia, let me appeal for just that. I'm asking the Al-Shabaab to allow the aid through to the people. And I take the point that you make about the government in Mogadishu, so-called government in Mogadishu, because, of course, it doesn't control most of the country and sometimes not even most of Mogadishu. I'm asking this Al-Shabaab to allow the aid agencies through to the scene of the disaster so that people can be kept alive who will otherwise perish. Abdi, thanks for the call. Let's stay in London. Talk to Charles about the unrest on England's streets. Charles, welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go on.
Hello.
Yes, go on, Charles.
Yeah. I want to talk about the unrest in London.
Yes, go on.
And it's really painful what we see, what has been happening in London across the UK, in Birmingham, in Manchester. And from the program last week, I realized that most people are blaming the government, talking to David Cameron and so on and so forth. But I want to look at it a little bit more critically. I think this is a general problem. And the problem which is the main thing in the developed world, and especially in this country, is a problem of breakdown of morals. Our youth have no morals at all. And if we want to look at that critically, we have to come into our individual homes. What is being exhibited out there is what the children have been trained in their homes. The time has come, I think, if we need to have better things seen out there, we need to train our children better in our homes.
Well, I've got to tell you, Charles, I really can't accept that about our youth. My children have morals. The children of all my friends have morals. The children who are going to the mosque and going to the church and going to the Boy Scouts and the Girl Guides and active in all sorts of charities and campaigns, the young people involved in the Stop the War movement and so on, all of those have morals. What you're really saying is that the poorest children on the meanest streets, with the least prospects, with the greatest levels of unemployment, with a bleak future ahead of those. Just today we learned that nearly one in four young people in Britain is unemployed, with no prospect of a job, no potential to go to college or university, no clubs, no community centres, no youth facilities, nothing, just the streets stretched out ahead of them with no idea. It's not morals they lack, though no doubt some do. It's jobs and hope that they lack. At least that's my point of view. A man who knows Tottenham well is a conservative, but a real people's man, William Spring. He's joining me now, up there on the plasma. William, welcome back to the show.
George.
How does it all look to you now, a week later?
Tottenham is still looking a bit like a war zone, with plenty of burnt out buildings. And it's a very unfortunate situation that's arisen. The main problem has been that the initial problem, initial difficulty was not dealt with in the correct way. The problem was unfortunately created by shooting dead a young man, Michael Duggan. Now, Michael Duggan was driving down the road only about 300 metres away from where I'm doing this interview. He was in a minicab. He was not actually committing any criminal offence by driving in a minicab. He was then with his driver, who was, an illegal immigrant, apparently. He was brought, the car was stopped by the police. The illegal immigrant was got out of the car. 6 minutes later, Michael Duggan was got out of the car. And then something happened. I'm not quite sure what, but it ended up with two bullets in Michael Duggan. Now, Michael Duggan was not carrying an offensive weapon. The gun was found, a gun was found in the car, in the minicab, under the seat. And it could have been planted there. The basic problem is the police really have no mandate to go around shooting young black men, however disagreeable they may, whatever bad occupation they may be following. There is no death penalty in England legally, but the police have set it upon themselves to impose a death penalty on people they don't apparently like, such as in the case of Mark Saunders, the barrister who had a wobbly in the King's off the King's Road. He could have easily been, well, not easily, but at least an attempt could have been made to bring about a peaceful solution.
Well, I don't want to confuse these two cases, William, because I certainly disagree with you on the second one. This man who you say had a wobbly was firing live ammunition out of the window at the police. And I don't think you can blame the police for shooting someone who's shooting at them, but that's a different matter. In the case of Duggan, as you rightly say, he was not in possession, as he stood outside the car, of an offensive weapon. And moreover, the official story lied to the world that he had not only been in possession of an offensive weapon, but had actually fired it at a police officer, the bullet lodging in the radio of the policeman. Only later, after the death and after, I think, the riot, did we learn that in fact both of the bullets that were fired by the police, and moreover that Duggan had no weapon on him when he was shot. This is incendiary stuff, isn't it, William?
Yes, of course. And I think that it would have been unbelievable if there hadn't been a protest of some sort. And in fact, a peaceful procession went down from Broadwater Farm to the Tottenham Police Station and stood around for several hours. apparently no one from the Tottenham Police Station or no one from the Chief Metropolitan Police Commissioner bothered to come and talk to them. I think if the Chief Met Commissioner had come with a whole convoy of police cars with his gold braid from Scotland Yard and actually met these young people, and, well, not only young people, but community people, then I think the disaster that occurred that night could possibly have been averted.
Well, look, I'll tell you what, William, we're going to have to continue this conversation. I'm sure that this is a story that will run and run, and your voice is a very important one that needs to be heard. Thank you very much indeed. That was William Spring. He stood as a Conservative candidate at the election in Tottenham Hill at the last election. But as you can see, he's not ready to mince his words about what happened to Duggan and subsequently within the community. Let's go to Germany. Talk to Zeratzion, if I've got the name correct, who wants to talk about Libya. Yes, yes, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening.
I just want to talk about 3 points. We don't have, I'm sure, I don't want to take your time. I want to point out three things. The first is that I used to watch Press TV for a long time, but for a good time, they have deviated from their independence, from their very accurate broadcasting. I don't know if the government of Iran had its fingers on it, and they would just want to talk about the politics they want to talk to. I'm not dissatisfied with the Press TV reports. This one thing. The second thing is about your topic today over the unrest in London. And, you know, you could talk a lot about it, but I just want to say a few words about it. And that is the British government and the British people, they don't have their house clean. But on the other hand, they interfere in other countries, independent countries like in Libya, and tell them their house is not clean. Mm. And you last time when you were reporting about Libya, I was very dissatisfied about your comments, because your comment was against Gaddafi. Gaddafi is really a brave man.
Is that the same Gaddafi who was paying Tony Blair $1 million a year as a consultant? Is that that Gaddafi you're talking about?
No, about, you know, you supported, if I understood you correctly that time, you supported the rebels, and you were trying to discredit Gaddafi.
No, Gaddafi, I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you a question. No, listen, you stop and listen to me. First of all, if you want to know my views on what's happening in Libya, just type in George Galloway plus Libya on YouTube, and you'll see some epic interviews with tens of thousands, actually scores of thousands of viewers, which will shed some light on my actual position. But I'm asking you, this independent man, Gaddafi, you're talking about, is he the same Gaddafi who kissed Tony Blair in a tent, who handed Tony Blair all the details of all his previous relationships with radical organizations and people in Britain, one of whom was not me, I quickly add, because I've never had any dealings with Gaddafi. Is Gaddafi the man who paid Tony Blair $1 million a year from the Libyan people's money as a consultant to the Libyan Sovereign Wealth Fund? Is that the one you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about Gaddafi, who did a lot for his people and for his country.
Yeah. That's why him and his family
going to the West.
That's why him and his family are so rich. That's why they've got so many tens of millions of dollars carrying around in their bags. That's why they opened their country to the West. They betrayed everyone they'd ever been friends of. Please, don't paint Gaddafi as Che Guevara to me. I'm against the war in Libya. I'm against NATO in Libya. But Gaddafi ain't no Guevara, and you'll never persuade me otherwise. Let's go to the UK and talk to David on the unrest. David, welcome to the show, my friend.
Good evening, George.
Good evening to you.
Nice to speak to you again.
And you.
Yes, with the unrest in the UK, I still feel there was a lot more behind it than what was obviously being led to believe. As I said last week, I believe the killing of the young man was a catalyst to start the unrest, but the way it spread so quickly from city to city, it smacks of being organised from behind. It's like a false flag event. Now, I would ask myself why, and the conclusion I come to, and this is purely just my opinion, is the government needed an excuse to impose more draconian laws and in ways to control the people.
Now, let me just ask you, or before you go further.
Yeah.
By that reckoning, all those little thugs and robbers,
yeah,
who were kicking people to death and smashing in windows and stealing people's groceries from their stores and so on, mm-hmm, they were all agents of the British government, were they?
No. What I'm saying is, obviously, there was an underlying unrest throughout the country, and I think most people realise this. What I believe, and it is only my belief, that there were agents put in amongst them to stir up the trouble, to agitate...
Have you got any evidence of that, David?
Not as yet, no. But
not as yet. Well, come back and talk to us if you ever find any, won't
right.
you? Let's go to Pakistan, talk to Sakina about the situation in Bahrain. Sakina, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Yes.
I don't know whether to say good morning or...
Well, it's good evening here, but whatever it is, I hope it's good.
I hope it's good. Anyway, Ellen. Anyway, the three questions I have, and I wonder if anyone can answer these. One, why are the protests in Bahrain not given coverage in the mainstream media? Two, are the human rights violations that are taking part there, are there not any human rights violations taking part there? And the third one, are the Shia protesters less human than the ruling Sunni minority?
The minority that you describe as Sunni are not ruling in Bahrain. The people who are ruling in Bahrain are one family, a family business, of the Don Corleone kind, a family business of the Sicilian kind, if you get my drift. It's nothing to do with the fact that they're Sunni. This dictatorship is a dictatorship over both Sunni and Shia. They and their small clique of thieves and killers and torturers are the people we have to isolate, not fall into the trap of talking about ruling Sunni minority. We're talking about the Al Khalifa family business that we have to isolate. And the answer to your other two questions, Sakina, are clear enough. The United States has just signed a new deal so that its navy can be based in Bahrain and can patrol the Persian Gulf to try and threaten and intimidate the Islamic Republic of Iran. The second reason is because if Bahrain falls to democracy, one man, one woman, one vote, then Saudi Arabia, the greatest dictatorship of them all, will not be far behind. These are the two salient reasons why the Western media are ignoring this story. Both of those reasons. There are others, but these are the two most salient. So I say, let's have one standard, not two. Let's not talk with forked tongue, Mr. Obama. If you're for human rights in Syria, how come you're the best friend of those crushing human rights in Bahrain? I'll be back after the news. You don't want to miss it, I promise you. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, bringing you the big conversation, bringing you the great debate. We're debating tonight the unrest that swept England's streets and the reverberations that continue to shake the very pillars of British society. We're talking about Rupert Murdoch and his son in deeper and deeper trouble. We're talking about the situation in Bahrain, where the human rights president, Barack Obama, has just signed a new deal with the Bahraini military and the dictatorship there, the royal dictatorship of the Al-Khalifas, who've monopolized power for more than 200 years and whose prime minister has been in office since 1960. And we're talking, of course, about the situation in Somalia, where millions are at risk of starving to death, and the world, which can move itself for war all right, doesn't seem to be able properly to get a handle on the situation. Eamon in Ireland is on the line on exactly that subject. Eamon, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, how are you doing, George?
Good, nice to talk to you, sir.
It's good to kind of hear you standing up for the oppressed, and there's an awful lot of oppressed people in the world, and it's very sad to see the injustice as well.
Well, that's what we try to be, the voice of the voiceless here, Eamon.
Very good. I don't always see eye to eye with you on every subject, but I have to say I do admire you, and I do think that you do try and bring the truth forward, which I admire.
Thanks, Eamon.
I just like to say, in Somalia now, with all the people there who are actually suffering really, really badly, and to see human beings who would not be moved to actually raise a finger to try and help them. And then there are these kind of terrorists that are going around, which are meant to be so-called freedom fighters, and they're actually withholding the aid from the people. As a working-class Dublin Irishman, I want to just say it really breaks my heart to see that people would do something like that.
Well, it's a very complex subject, Eamon. It's not quite as straightforward as that, I'm afraid. Yeah. What we have is a stooge government in Mogadishu, which isn't really the government of the country, sometimes isn't really the government of the capital city itself. It is supported by the West, but it's at war with this guerrilla organization called Al-Shabaab, and great atrocities have been taking place on both sides and for many decades. Somalia has been more than 30 years in this situation. And it's been a plaything. The West is interested in it only insofar as it's a potential breeding ground for Al-Qaeda-type terrorism. And the Ethiopian government have regularly invaded and interfered in the story. So all I can do as a man with a soapbox, which is all I have now, is to appeal to the Al-Shabaab. And I'm ready to talk to any of their representatives directly, if they would like, to allow this aid to get through to where it needs to go. Not aid going into the pockets of the government in Mogadishu, not aid going into anybody's pockets, but aid going into the mouths of the millions of people at risk of starving to death. But thanks for your call and your kind remarks. I'm going to Italy now to talk to Ahmed about Somalia. Ahmed, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello. Good evening, Mr. George.
Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Mr. George, I beg you, I want to talk about... I know you are not talking about Italy, but I'm very surprised that these people are talking that they have human rights in Europe. And now, in Italy, they are telling the immigrants that they are going to give them papers. They are going to give them documents. And they are going to remove your blood, 3 bottles of blood, without the documents, in Roma right now. I'm telling you something about Italy. And we are not seeing the woman right in Europe, but they are forcing the Arabs to get woman right. That is my point, Mr. George.
Okay, well, thanks, Ahmed. I can't comment on the allegation that the Italian government is forcibly taking people's blood. I would have thought that that was illegal anywhere in the European Union, but I'll look into it. And Ahmed, thanks very much for the call. Aziz is in Sweden and wants to talk about Bahrain. Aziz, welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah, George Galloway, it's always nice to see you, and keep on, we are all behind you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to comment about generally what's happening in the Arab world and what's happening in Somalia.
Yeah.
As I see it, we're having almost an ideological war. We have one side, the Islamic Republic of Iran, may God make them stronger every day. And on the other side, we have the Saudis and the likes. Help me to understand what is happening in the Saudi population that they do not see, and this goes to all other Emirati and all the royal. How come they cannot see what their leaders are doing? Have they been hypnotized, by the way? Please help me to understand this. And
well, let me try, Aziz. You can stuff a lot of people's mouths with gold, and Saudi Arabia has more gold than anyone else, metaphorically speaking, apart from the money they have invested in the United States, which has effectively been handed over to a foreign power. But they still have lots of gold. And when the king returned after his illness abroad, he spent $37 billion, to sweeten the population. And that works for some people for some time. You can also throw sand in the eyes of a given number of people by trying to blind them to the truth, by stirring up sectarian hatred and sectarian division. But underneath all of that, Aziz, I am certain that the great people of Arabia, are just waiting their time, are nursing their wrath to keep it warm, and that one day a storm for freedom will arise in Arabia. And you know that the storms in Arabia can become very, very hot indeed. Aziz in Sweden, thanks for the call. Let's talk to Nawal in the United Kingdom about the Yemen. Nawal, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Now, you've just returned, I think, from Yemen.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us what the situation was like there, would you?
You can tell that all the protesters that are on the streets are very adamant and they're not going anywhere until Ali Abdullah Saleh resigns. I mean, it's a monsoon season now. It's very heavy rains every day, but they're still there in the streets waiting for him to resign.
And the numbers are huge. I just saw some pictures on Press TV.
The numbers are not getting any less, no matter what you hear from other media. They're actually increasing every single day.
I mean, it seemed like the most gigantic crowd. Help me understand this. How is it possible for such a crowd, day after day, for 6 months, to be on the streets?
They're in there in the scorching sun and in the rain, and they're not going anywhere until he resigns.
And the dictator has flown away to another country. How come he's still in power?
Because he has a few people that he's paying to take care of things while he's there. Although he says it's because he's made institutions in Yemen, that's not true. Most of the ministries are closed. People are not getting paid, they're not getting their wages if they work for the government. Some of the protesters that he has in the places where they're supporting him are getting fed every day, and they're actually the poorest society in Yemen, which are sitting there because he's feeding them, giving them water every day, and that's the only reason why they're there.
And what about the military? In the beginning, some officers were coming over to the revolution. Is that continuing?
Most of them are in prison now. There's a number around 17 from the military that are now in prison, and no one's heard of them. They don't actually know. I spoke to some of their family. They don't actually know where their sons have been taken, what prison, where they are. If they're still alive, nobody knows. So there's a bit of fear going around as well. But they're still very adamant to make sure that Ali Abdullah Saleh never returns.
Well, he's on the news tonight threatening to return. What's your take on that? Is he going to get on the plane or is he bluffing?
Sheikh Sadiq al-Ahmed has sworn that Ali Abdullah Saleh will not return while he's still alive. And I've chosen to trust him because he's holding most of the power right now in Yemen. And he's acting as a great support for the revolutionaries and for the protesters in the streets. So I don't think he'll be able to return. And even if he does return, it will only be to resign. He has no power in Yemen. He is no longer the president. No one will ever take him seriously in that country again.
Okay, Nawal, thank you very much indeed. And I salute Sheikh Sadiq and Sheikh Hamid Al-Ahmar, both friends of mine, and leading that revolutionary cause, as Nawal has just said. Let's go to Hudson in the United Kingdom on the UK and Bahrain. Hudson, welcome to the show, my friend. Hudson?
Yes, George.
Yes, go ahead, go ahead.
Can you hear me, George?
Yes, go on.
Yes, peace be on to the rest of us and so on. You know, George, we don't always get along, but like Eamon said earlier, the Irish lad, you are one hell of a man.
Thanks,
and
Hudson.
I respect you most highly.
Thank you, sir. Thank
you. Believe that. And I appreciate you, the way you stand up for the people.
Thanks.
Trust me. And, you know, George, I love you so much you wouldn't understand. But what I wanted to say, with England, UK, where we are today, what a lot of people haven't realized is that in this, in the communities where the initial problem, you know, went off, the, like a lot, your guest, Mr. Spring, was he gave us plenty of information tonight.
Yes.
You know, more than enough information. I'm proud of him.
Yes.
You know, but what people didn't realize that in Birmingham, there was another young lad, black man, that was killed as well, beside the other three Muslim brothers that were killed. So that's four people that we know were killed in Birmingham because of this crisis as it stands. And there was another brother killed in, he wasn't a brother, but a black man was killed in Croydon. So there was three blacks killed by police.
Well, I don't think the Croydon killing was by the police, but I may be wrong about that, Hudson. But what's clear, and I'm grateful to you for your kind words, what's clear is that this is a very disunited kingdom. It's disunited on a national level because there were no riots in Scotland and there were no riots in Wales. All the riots were in England. And the divisions within England, between communities and between the communities and the police, between the people and the government, which is dragging the country to the precipice, which is driving through massive cuts and presiding over mass unemployment without a mandate, without having been elected into power. In fact, a coalition government which rests upon the Liberal Democrats who campaigned in the election for exactly the opposite of what they are now causing to be implemented. It's a very dangerous situation that we have in Britain and particularly in England. And not just in the obvious places. There were market towns, towns like Gloucester, towns where there are virtually no immigrants, for example, which went up in flames and in riots. Deep-seated division and problems in this country. Hudson, thanks for your call. I'm going to America now, the United States of America, to talk to Hisbe about Bahrain. Welcome to the show, my friend. Hello.
Hey, Mr. George, how you doing?
Very good. Nice to hear from you.
I'm just calling from US, and I really like your show, and thank you for serving the people.
Thanks.
I would like to ask you about what's going on in Eritrea right now, about the sanctions, everything. I believe the United States is the United States policies is against the people of Eritrea all the time since 1950s until now. Can you explain a little bit about this?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, the United States was supporting the Eritrean freedom struggle whilst a communist government was in power in Addis Ababa, the government of Mengistu Haile Mariam. And the Eritrean Liberation Organization, I know this, I was deeply involved in Eritrea during the famine in the mid-1980s. I met with Isaias, now the president of Eritrea, then the leader of the main rebel organization, the EPLF. And the United States were supporting, and Saudi Arabia was supporting as a proxy for the United States, the Eritrean liberation struggle. After, of course, the fall of the dictator Mengistu and his replacement by stooges of the United States policy changed. This kind of deep cynicism of Western policy in the Horn of Africa is one of the reasons why we have repeated famines there. And why we have a government in Ethiopia, which is the most militarized government in the whole world, which is spending more as a percentage on war and weapons than any government in the world, at the same time that some of its people are starving to death in famine. You really couldn't make it up. But thanks for the call. Let's go to the plasma, the comment wall, and take a couple of quick emails. Let's see which country, which point of view. Pertpal from Blackpool, UK. I'm a new viewer to your show's comment and the real deal. After the Murdoch scandal with Millie Dowler broke out, I started watching the news channels a lot more often to educate myself. I found Press TV on Sky 515 and your shows. Then the British riots broke out soon afterwards. I love watching your shows for your straight talking, honesty and the courage to speak the truth when others in the mainstream news channels and media are afraid to do so. Well, thank you very much indeed. We try to be the voice of the voiceless. Heaven knows none of the rest are. Let's take another email on the comment wall. This one is from Caroline in London. The UK recognised the new Libyan council. Will they recognise the new Yemeni council? If not, then why not? Also, why is Cameron treating the youth like mobs rather than disaffected people in poverty? Very good, Caroline. I don't think David Cameron's going to recognize the National Council for Peaceful Revolution in Sana'a, in Yemen. But I salute it. It's got my recognition. Let's talk to Imran in Dublin about the unrest in England. Imran, welcome to the show.
Hello. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
I would like to... Hello?
Yes, go ahead. But your TV must be down at zero, my friend.
I would like to make a comment about the riots in the UK. But
yep.
Before that, I would like to say something, sir. I really praise and admire your great work and your courage.
Thank you. But you really must put the volume down to zero, sir. Imran, I'm sorry, we've lost you. Let's go to Andrew in Scotland on the subject of the unrest in England. Andrew, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, George. Good evening. Thank you for letting me speak.
You're welcome.
As Thomas Jefferson, the founding father of the United States, said, when the government fears the people, we have liberty. When the people fear the government, we have tyranny, which is what we now have in Britain. And as Churchill also said, the greatest threat our people have to fear is not the armies and navies of this world, but the lack of training and employment our youth have to face. And if the courts, I would like to add as an addendum to that, are so inept and or slow, then they're running 24/7/7/7 now. Why can't they do this ordinarily instead of, as is ordinarily the case, they drag on for months, if not years, at inordinate public expense? And it's a disgrace that any defendant has to attend court for any reason until such time as the proceedings have commenced, because it's just a money-making scam for our learned friends, who, in my estimation, aren't particularly bright in the first instance, the lawyers. But there you go. And one final point I would like to add. I can remember as far back as the 1970s being disbarred from the school fields to go and play, and the tennis courts and so on and so forth, and given that the schools, well, ordinarily, because of what happened to that girl in Middlesbrough, I forget her name, she was stabbed, the school should be cordoned off, admittedly, but the school playing fields, and notably all the school facilities therein, out with the school hours, should be readily available to the public. It's the most underutilized public...
Well, on that last point, I certainly agree. I've been campaigning for that all my life, for schools to be transformed after school into community facilities. Let's stay in Scotland, talk to Martin on the unrest. Martin, welcome to the show.
I always wonder who should be running this country.
Yes, I often wonder that myself.
Who should be running Scotland and Wales, and who should be running England, and who's starting all the troubles?
Well, you tell me.
Well, there's unrest in England by their own people, but there's already unrest in Scotland. Years of English terrorists being in Scotland as well.
English terrorists?
Should Scotland, Ireland, Wales, no run.
I'm really not following your line of reasoning, Martin. What English terrorists are you talking about?
British, Saxon, Englishmen run authorities in Welsh castles and run our countries.
They run your country? You mean they run Scotland?
Yes.
Have the Scottish people voted for separation, for independence?
They're still run by English authorities and they've got...
No, I'm asking you, have the Scottish people voted for independence?
They voted for independence, but they still don't run their own countries.
But when did they vote for independence?
About 3 or 4 years ago when Alex Salmond won the...
Well, I'm afraid a little knowledge is dangerous, Martin. I think if you return to the books that you have obviously not read, you'll discover that the Scottish people have never voted for independence. And it follows that the Scottish people, until they do, want to remain within the British state. If they didn't want to, they could freely vote to leave it any time they liked. That's why to describe the English as terrorists in Scotland is either a monstrosity or you're having a laugh. You may be having a joke. Maybe you're one of these comedians on the fringe of the Edinburgh Festival. Let's go to London, talk to Steve on WMD and Iraq. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Thanks. Welcome. Go ahead.
Great stuff. A lot of points to touch with you, George, but you're doing a great job. Proud of you. Well done, Nick.
Thanks, mate.
I was involved, well, not involved, but I was at the time in just before the WMD situation in Iraq. I was involved with the helicopter pilots doing the random searches, etc., palaces, blah, blah, blah. And everyone knew, Hans Blix knew, everyone knew at the time, we all knew, there was zero there.
Yeah.
Absolute zero.
That was one of the biggest lies, one of the biggest lies in all history, actually.
Absolutely, Jules, totally agree with you. We knew 7 months down the line, everyone knew there was zero there.
And a million people lost their lives, and hundreds of thousands of foreign soldiers still planted in the Persian Gulf, threatening all around them.
Absolutely, yeah, you're definitely correct there, George. There's so much more to discuss with you, but just to let you know, what you see on these standard media channels are absolute nonsense.
Well, you're right there. Steve, I'm sorry to cut you short. It's almost the end of the show. Ahmed in Manchester can at least say good evening. Ahmed, how are you?
Okay, thank you very much. How are you, George?
Yes, go ahead quickly.
I just wanted to say, you know, I think there's like a moral collapse with everything that's going on, you know, with the riots.
Well, I'll tell you where the moral collapse is, Ahmed. The moral collapse, like a fish, starts at the top. A fish rots from the head. We've got a parliament that's rotten. We've got a political system that's rotten. We've got a mass media that's rotten. Is it any wonder that there's rottenness in the state? Something has to change. Well, we're doing our best to tell the truth to the people. If you've enjoyed it, come back next week and bring somebody else with you, God willing.
Hello, just comment your name and the face of that number. And just make sure that your television volume is set up to 0.
Zero. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You need to put through the phone number and then we'll be back.
Can I have your telephone number?